and would actually walk out these days with an unfolding knowledge and a greater growing awareness of God, and in fact the fear of God happening in our lives. And so I actually come to you this morning building on what Dave has already been able to share with you about who God is. And this morning I want to just perhaps move us on a little bit further in this journey towards knowing God and actually looking at one key relationship in the Bible that is very clearly described between a man and God. Does anyone have any ideas about who that man might be this morning? Any hints? Abraham. We're going to look at the man Abraham this morning. And some of you who are familiar with this man might know that God himself actually describes Abraham as a friend. Incredible, don't you think? This is actually recorded a number of times in the Bible. If you want to flip over to James chapter 2 this morning, it says this. In verse 23, and the scripture was fulfilled which says, Abraham believed God and it was credited to him as righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. You know, it's interesting. I'm sure many of you would say this morning that you have some friends. Do you not? Anyone looking for some friends this morning? I'm always on the hunt for some new friends. And the term friend is quite an intimate kind of description about a person, isn't it? I describe Joe as one of my closest friends. It is a fairly intimate relationship. It describes a closeness of relationship. It describes a place of trust, a place of sharing. And the dictionary actually describes that a friend is a person well known to the other, regarded with liking, affection, loyalty. A friend is an intimate relationship. This was not, in fact, Abraham's assessment of his relationship with God. This isn't what Abraham actually said about himself. Oh yes, I'm a friend of God. No, it's actually recorded in Isaiah, and Jehoshaphat also said it in Chronicles about Abraham, that it was actually what God said about Abraham, not that which Abraham said about his own relationship with God. Incredible! Don't you think that God, Almighty God, actually describes this about a limited, physical, mortal being could actually be connected to the immortal, all-powerful, all-knowing, supreme God, would actually look upon this man as his dearly beloved friend. Don't be too scared. What do we see? The mortal man, you and I described as in the Bible, dust. Oh, that really didn't go so well, but it might stay there and remind you that we are dust. Says that we, man, are just a collection of dust in the hands of God. And yet this almighty, all-powerful, all-knowing God actually describes his connection with Abraham as one which would be friend. This is exactly how God considers Abraham, and his relationship with God was in fact a true and deep friendship. Incredible to me. And so to me, this relationship actually kind of conjures up some questions in my mind. How was this relationship actually possible? How did dust actually connect with God? And what actually was this kind of friendship like? And if Abraham could have it with God, and God could describe his relationship with Abraham as one of friendship, can God too today describe his connection to me as one of friendship? An intimate, close place of trust and sharing. Could he this morning call me his friend? What do you think? Would you like to be called a friend of God? Would you like God himself to actually look down into our city of Hobart? Would you like God to actually look down into this place this morning and say, hey, There are my friends down at Energizer Life Church. Look at them. Look how close we walk together. Look at what we're doing together, what we're sharing with each other, and look at what is actually coming out of this relationship. I hope and pray that as this year unfolds, that true to what God has laid on the hearts of Dave and Alex and the ministry team, that we would be working towards that as a goal for this year. That God would actually be able to look at us, each one individually, but also us collectively, and actually look at us and say, yeah, I can trust them. I can work with them. I can give them that confidential kind of trusting, caring relationship and call them my friends. You see, part of the answer to this question this morning is yes. God is not actually a respecter of persons, the Bible says. We too can experience the same kind of friendship with God that Abraham enjoyed. But to do this first, I want to have a look at some, and I'm sure we could look at more, but a few things confined to the time that we have this morning, a few things that actually make up part of Abraham's relationship with God and what we can actually learn from this friendship and how we too can become a friend of God. So, first thing this morning is being a friend with God requires agreement. So how many friends can you say this morning that you have? I shared not so long ago that National Geographic describes that in school, we'll have quite a number of friends, up to 50 in fact. But by the time you're 40, this number will actually drop to 2. So I wonder this morning, how many Facebook friends do you have? 400, that's incredible. I've seen some of you have amazing numbers of people that you actually connect with on Facebook, but I wonder how many of them would you actually describe as a person known well to another, regarded with liking, affection, loyalty, and intimate close connection. Do you have a best friend this morning? You see, we have many people that we come in contact with and we might actually call them a friend. We might actually meet many more, I hope, in time. But I wonder how many of those you would actually really put in this category of true friendship. See, one of the most obvious reasons that we become friends with another is that we have a point of agreement. Think for a minute. Your very best friends in life are those who you share a common agreement with on the greatest number of really important issues. You see, my best friends know that we agree that coffee is better than tea. My friends choose tomato over tomato. My friends choose age before beauty. My friends definitely know that cricket triumphs over AFL. You see, my friends, my best friends, agree on the really important issues. You see, you can be on friendly terms with another. You can have a nice, warm conversation. You can enjoy seeing them from time to time. But the closest of our friends are those who think like us. You see, clashing minds and diverging opinions don't really make for close relationships. You see, if my husband and I clash over everything, it is unlikely that we will enjoy a close, intimate place of trust and care in our relationship. We do not agree over everything, but on the important issues, we come together in a place of agreement. See, Joe and I, we agree that Jesus Christ is Lord of Lords, King of Kings, and our lives are given over to serving Him. Joe and I agree on how we are going to raise our children. You see, we come together in a place of agreement over the really important issues. In the words of the old saying, birds of a feather flock together. And so it was the case when we look at Abraham and his friendship with God. Amazingly, Abraham is in agreement with God about the incredible promises that God actually entrusted into his care. And if you want to flip over, you can read, so let me tidy myself up there. If you can actually read in Genesis on the first accounts where this is given. But let me look over in Genesis 26 when he's actually affirming these promises. And he's actually, God at this point, he's actually talking to Isaac, Abraham's son, and he's reconfirming the promises he gave to Abraham that are now being passed on to his son Isaac. Where am I? Genesis 26, one page back. Okay, verses 3 to 5. It says this: "Stay in this land for a while, and I will be with you, and I will bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give you all of these lands and will confirm the oath I swore to your father Abraham. I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and will give them all these lands. And through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed because Abraham obeyed me and kept my requirements, my commands, my decrees and my laws. So Isaac stayed." You see, God was able to make these unconditional promises to Abraham. And now we see that because of Abraham's obedience to God, God is able to pass on these promises to his son Isaac. And yet we see in verse 5 an incredible part of this relationship. It was because of the agreement that Abraham had with God about these promises. Abraham was in total agreement with God. He obeyed God precisely in every detail, even when he didn't know what the outcome was going to be. Incredible, don't you think? These incredible promises, don't forget, they were given to him when he was already old. Old, old. I don't mean just a little bit of grey hair old. I mean old. He is getting on in time, and God actually comes to him and says, "You're going to have a son." And it's quite hilarious, really. And yet, Abraham chose to agree with God about these promises. You and I have friends that we agree with, but can I challenge each one of us this morning? Can you and I agree with God concerning the promises that he has given to you and I? See, this term agreed in the Hebrew is quite interesting. I can't pronounce it at all, but it means to actually fix, appoint, assemble, meet, set, betroth, to meet by appointment. In this term agreement is not actually just a sense of two people walking along together and they actually walk along together because they choose to agree on something. It's actually much more specific than that. It's actually a picture of two agreeing to meet and actually walking forth in purpose from there. It's like me saying to Alex, "I'll meet you down at Salamanca at the fountain and we'll decide from there which cafe we are going to go to." See the difference between us just happening to walk upon one another down in Salamanca and agreeing, "Oh, hi Alex, want to go for coffee?" It's actually much more intentional, this agreement between God and Abraham. You see that they actually agreed to come together over these promises and then walk together in relationship out of the promise that God has actually extended to Abraham. You see, God actually too brings the Israelites, we see later on in their story, he actually brings them to Mount Sinai and makes a covenant agreement with them about how they should actually walk in the land. And throughout the Bible and what is recorded there is that the Israelites struggle in this agreement with God, to-ing and fro-ing and not actually walking in the confines of what God had actually asked them to do. They didn't actually follow the example of Abraham, their forefather, in actually agreeing over the promises that God had done. You see, Abraham went out of his homeland to a place God would show him. He found out how God walked and he actually walked into it. He walked in the paths of the law and didn't follow the ways of the world. You know, I read an interesting story during the week about the third US president. His name was Thomas Jefferson, rather an incredible man and a man who has had much recorded about him in history. I read an interesting story about him and a group of men that were actually out on horseback, out in the open plains, and they come to a river that is raging, literally raging before them. And these men have to make a decision about whether they will cross. And he had a group of men with him, all on horseback, and it was quite likely that in the process of crossing this river, that they could actually lose their lives. So dangerous and so raging was this river. And it's recorded that there was a man in the group who actually walked up to Thomas Jefferson and asked, "Can I hitch a ride with you? Looks a bit scary for me." And they get to the other side, and another member of the group actually said, "Why on earth did you approach the President of the United States to hitch a ride on his horse?" And the man who had hitched a ride at this point says, "I didn't realise it was the President of the United States. All I knew is that I was looking at all of your faces, and many of them were saying no, but his was saying yes." Incredible story. That God can look out to a sea of people. And to him, he looks at our faces. And some he sees, "No, God can't possibly believe that I'm going to be the father of many nations. Look at me." And yet on the other hand, he looked at Abraham. And he can look at you and I. He can look you in the face and say, "Yep, yes, man. Yes, woman. They're with me on these purposes." Come on this morning, when God looks upon the earth, I pray that he would look at us, you and I, and he would see written on your face, written on your life, written on your heart, "Yes, God, your promises to me are yes and amen." Unless we can agree with God, can we not have friendship with him this morning? Come on, let's agree with God over his word, over his truth, over his way of walking on the earth, that we might have close and intimate friendship with him. We can say, "Yes, we'll go into an unknown land like Abraham. We'll go into an unknown territory. We'll walk into an unknown place and trust you that you will come through with the goods for me." We can obey him and in turn walk in friendship with him. Let's let him set the pace. Let's let him determine the route that our lives will follow. And when we come to agreement with him, it's one of the necessary factors in having a friendship with God this morning. Second thing this morning is being friends with God requires loyalty and dependability. Think about those again that you call your close friends, or those that you would like to have as your close friends. What do you actually desire in them as a quality when it comes to loyalty and dependability? We've all heard, or maybe you haven't, have you perhaps used the term a fair weather friend? Joe uses this term fairly frequently in regard to taxi drivers. A fair weather taxi driver is one that only wants to go to the airport and will sit for 6 hours at a time waiting for you to come off the plane so he doesn't have to look for any other work. Now, once upon a time, Joe scoffed at these men, and yet I have heard himself come to describe himself at moments of being a fair weather taxi driver too. Oh dear, he came back into the building before I was going to say, "Shh, don't tell him," but he heard me himself. Do you have any fair weather friends? You might use it in terms of your gym membership. Sure, you're hardcore all summer, getting up when the sun is out and the birds are tweeting at you. What happens when 6 a.m. comes in wintertime? It's cold. And it's dark and getting out of bed is very hard. Are you a fair weather gym member? You see, any fair weather friends are those who are happy to be around when all is peachy, when your bank account's full, when you can shout them out for coffee time and time again. but when trouble hits, they can't be reached. Their mobile is forever on message bank. You just cannot find that girl. Where's she gone from my life when I need her the most? My fair weather friend, where have you gone? Fair weather friends behave like they do because they're on the lookout from what they can get out of a relationship rather than what they can give and put into a relationship and a friendship to actually make it work. See, true friends are loyal and faithful to one another when the going is easy, yes, but also when the going gets tough. Your true friends are the ones you know you can rely on. They will be dependable. They will be loyal and trustworthy with you. True friends support each other. True friends sacrifice for each other. True friends are dependable. They are always there when they are needed. In Britain, a very long time ago, there was a magazine that put out a competition for a description of what a friend is. And I could spend all day reading to you some of the answers. They were magnificent, describing what a true friend is. But in the end, they chose this answer as their winner for this competition. It said, "A friend is one who comes in when the whole world has gone out." Beautiful, do you not think? A friend is one who comes into your life, who comes into your situation when the whole world has gone out. You know what? This describes my relationship with Jesus Christ. He came into my life when all else had gone out from my life. When the world had gone out from my circumstance and said, "You know what, Anna, you're not very much." It was Jesus Christ who came into my heart and said, "You know what? I paid a price for you. You are valuable and you have purpose." A true friend is one who comes in when the whole world is going out. Jesus Christ described this need for loyalty, dependability, and sacrifice as a component of our friendship with him when he recorded in John 15, verses 13, "Greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." And you know what? He was true to that statement when he walked the earth, and he is true to that statement today. Jesus Christ showed he is the ultimate friend. And he made the ultimate gesture of friendship in laying down his life for us as a sacrifice for my sin, for your sin. He literally practiced what he was preaching about. He went all the way for you and I. And his sacrifice for us, this gesture of friendship, should, I pray in me, evoke loyalty to him, and that my life in turn would be one that he can depend upon me in turn. John 15 and the following verse in verse 14 says, "You are my friends if you do what I command you to do." See, in this example, we're actually called, like Jesus went all the way for us, we in turn are asked to model our lives and go all the way for him. When he calls on you, when he calls on me, that we would be the ones who can be depended on to follow through with what we say about God, what we say about our relationship with God, that we would actually follow through with the action to actually back that statement up, that you and I too can practice what we preach. You see, loyalty and dependability only really made fully complete when they are tested. And when we were actually tempted to be the opposite, when we are presented with an opportunity to be disloyal, when we are presented with an opportunity to be, what's the opposite to dependable? Irresponsible. Undependable. Is that a word? It is now. But it, proof of our loyalty towards Jesus Christ is only proven when we have an opportunity to be disloyal to him. You see, if we're true friends with his son, we will be loyal to his commands regardless of the consequences. Oh, have you read any of Genesis lately? And seen Abraham and the test that he is given just, to me, is kind of unfathomable that the very promised son, Isaac, God actually intervenes and asks that God would actually, that Abraham would take his son as a sacrifice. Having three children of my own, being presented with this story, not only in the Bible, but when I personalize it and think about the consequences of this request of Abraham, is just unfathomable to me. Isaac is the promise, the embodiment of the promise. He is the dream come true. He is all that Abraham was looking for. And yet there's no record of Abraham actually questioning God about this request. You know, we see many a time, we see Moses, we see others actually coming back to God with a whole list of questions and saying, no, I can't possibly do that. Yet there's no record of this about Abraham and his interaction with God. There's no record of him questioning and saying, God, is this really what you're asking me to do? I can't possibly take my son. But what we do see is the incredible faith and loyalty and dependability of Abraham as he took his son, full of faith that God would provide a sheep, that God would actually provide a way for this promise still to be fulfilled, even though of the obstacle that he was presented with. Amazingly, Abraham did what God had commanded him and made preparations to slay Isaac. He demonstrates his loyalty to his Creator. He demonstrated that he could be depended on to carry out God's will, no matter how difficult the assignment. Hence, God is able to say of Abraham, "You are my friend. You can be depended upon. You will be loyal unto me." I wonder this morning, how is your loyalty to God and his commands? What difficult assignment have you been given this morning? What test might you face at this time towards your relationship with God and whether or not you can be called loyal to him and loyal to his purposes? What test might you face this morning? What difficult assignment? Just pause and think about the outcome of Abraham's loyalty and dependability, no matter what the consequence when God asks us. You know, God often actually comes to us with a way that seems uncertain and at points actually contrary to the very promise that he has given us. You may be aware that Joe and I have three children. I, in fact, have been pregnant four times. And many of you were on the journey with us as I carried a baby to nearly 13 weeks and actually had a miscarriage. And as you can tell, it's not an easy story to relate to you. So thinking about what Abraham faced with his son is just incredible. What is interesting to me about my own story is that when Joe and I got married, when I looked into the future for us, some things looked different to how I imagined. Yet one thing in my heart, which God has been loyal and faithful to, was my desire to be a mother. I may not be the best mother. Some days I do it really well. Some days I do a shocking job. And some of you have seen me in the supermarket on one of those days, so please give me grace and mercy every time you see me in a supermarket. In fact, hallelujah, though, Coles and Woolworths now let you do shopping online. Oh, no more trips to the supermarket with three children. I've gathered myself together and can go on with this story, but one thing I saw in our future when Joe and I got married was me with a little girl. And when we found out I was pregnant with Wesley, I thought he was my little girl. I thought he was my dream come true. And as we sat having the ultrasound at 20 weeks, I thought, great, my first pictures of my little girl. Oh, and they said, it's a boy. And I was like, no, it's a girl. I'm having a girl. I'm going to grow up and we're going to do our hair together. And I'm going to take her shopping and we're going to have a marvelous time. And poor Wesley, he came out a boy. We checked when he arrived in the world and he is definitely a boy. And I love him all the same. I wouldn't change it for a single bit. He's just delightful. And our family needed him to be the firstborn. Who knows you need a firstborn who is reliable and dependable and keeps everyone else in control? Keeps everyone on the straight and narrow. Hudson needs an older brother. You know, our second son is Hudson. And apparently, I don't remember saying this, but when he was born, we didn't find out on the way whether he was a boy or a girl. When he actually arrived in the world, apparently I said in exactly this tone, it's another boy! So 2 years ago, when I was carrying our third little baby, I was convinced that this was going to be my little girl. And after having two healthy pregnancies, two healthy live births, beautiful little boys, I thought I was invincible on this parenting journey. I thought me and my body, just as a Greek woman once told me, made for making babies. Nothing would ever go wrong. It would be easy and simple. And yet at 13 weeks, this little life slipped away. You know, Harriet, the little girl that we have, is like a treasure to me because she is the fulfillment of a promise to me that I would have a little girl. Do you know what? We called her Harriet Faith because faith is the substance of things hoped for. God is faithful and true to his promises. Do you know the week that I discovered that we were pregnant with Harriet was exactly the week that the little person that I was carrying was due to be born. God is faithful and true. It was only just a few days shy of Mother's Day that I discovered that I was pregnant with Harriet. God is faithful and true. Prior to Harriet being born, my sister-in-law, Anna, was pregnant. She also didn't know whether she was carrying a boy or a girl. And I said to God, you know what, God, I don't think I can do this again. I don't think I can be pregnant again. I don't think I can go through this again. So I'll tell you what, I'll make a deal with you, God. If my sister-in-law has a girl, then we'll just call that girl mine. I'll love that little thing so much she can't breathe. You know, I'll squeeze her so tight, I will buy her everything she wants. I'll take that little girl shopping. She can be my little girl. And while Anna was pregnant, I packed up all of our baby things, all of them. And we had a little car at that point, and I squished in the two boys and every single baby thing I had. That car was overflowing. I don't know how, if we had have stopped on the way, a policeman wouldn't have found the two children buried in the back with all the baby gear. I packed up every single baby thing I had and I took it to her, thinking, I just, too hard, God. God is faithful and true to his promises. Anna's little baby came into the world and it was another boy. You know, we have Harriet and you see me holding her and cuddling her and squeezing her. And it's precious, yes. But it is all the more precious to me because of the promise God had put in my heart about having a little girl. What test? What difficult assignment have you been given this morning? Can you be relied on? Can you be dependable before God to actually walk in agreement with God about his promises to you? A yes and amen. And when obstacle comes, when things don't look the way that you thought they would, can you still be relied on to be loyal and dependable to your God this morning? Can I encourage you, remain loyal, true, and dependable to God no matter what comes your way? I'm sure we're running out of time. I don't have a watch on. Naughty me. Oh, got a few more. Okay, next one is being... You were all thinking, excellent, she's going to be finished. Not so. Being friends with God requires confide ability. I don't think that's a word either, but I didn't think confide was cool enough, so we're going with being friends with God requires confide ability. One last aspect, or another aspect, of what constitutes friendship is that we would consider the ability of being true friends is that they confide in one another. One of those competition entries that I was telling you about in that British magazine was that true friends are those who you can be yourself with, that you can dare to let go, that you can dare to breathe out, that you dare to be yourself and they love you just the way you are. You see, true friends, good friends are those we can freely confide in, knowing that we can trust them with what we're actually feeling. You see, it's actually only a privileged position that we give to a few, not the multitudes. Many of you I do connect with on Facebook, and many of you are my true loyal friends. But for most of you, I just give you little snippets about my ongoing everyday. I'm not actually there to reveal my deepest emotions and feelings. Those I reserve for my true friends. See, with real friends, we can discuss what is on our mind. We can share our joys, our observations, our plans, and even our sorrows and regrets. And when there's actual true, deep, and intense friendship, nothing actually needs to be held back in that relationship. And Christ describes this dimension of friendship again in John 15, the following verse, John 15, verse 15. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I now make known to you. What an incredible place of confidability. You see, friends confide in each other, and Christ considers us to be such good friends that he is able to confide in us the Father's will. He's able to share with us the plans, the hopes, and the dreams the Father has for mankind. And he shares those dreams with us. Christ demonstrates to us that he wants to have a place of confidability in you and I, that we can actually handle the will of the Father and make it known for others. Just as Christ extends friendship through his willingness to confide in us, can I challenge us this morning, as he has done that for us, that we in turn would do it to him? If he trusts us with all that God the Father had given to him, all the plans for humanity entrusted to us, can we not in turn confide and trust in him with all of our dreams, all of our desires, all the things that we hope for, all the things that we feel bad about, all the things that are too hard for us? Can we not confide in him? He is faithful and just, and he can actually be trusted as a close confidant to you. You see, there's an incredible closeness in the relationship Abraham had with God. And you see this, if you want to have a look at it, we won't spend a lot of time there this morning because I want to do one more this morning. But we see this incredible place of confidability between Abraham and with God. It's actually at this point maybe I'll just talk about it rather than read it, but please go back and read Genesis chapter 18 and look at the relationship that Abraham has with God in regard to this quality. We actually see three visitors actually arrive to Abraham, and Abraham is actually, they're like angelic beings that come, and he actually recognizes the Christ. He actually recognizes these aren't just three strangers. This is God actually arriving at my house, and he goes and prepares a meal. And we actually see from here this incredible interaction between God and Abraham. And we see the incredible closeness and the confidability that Abraham has in his relationship with God. And we see in Genesis 18, it says, "Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm about to do?" That is, he is going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And God is actually thinking, will I hide this from Abraham? And he actually thinks, no. I can trust him. I can confide in him with what I am going to do. And it says, seeing that Abraham shall become a great and mighty nation, and with the nations on the earth shall bless themselves in him. No, for I have chosen him that he may charge his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he promised. Incredibly, God says of Abraham, for I know him and I know what he is going to do. I know that he can be trusted with my command. He can be trusted with this information, for he will chase after righteousness and justice on the earth. You know, the last point this morning is being a friend of God requires that we will fight the good fight. So that last definition, if you go back this morning to just our everyday dictionary, says, yes, a friend is well known to another and regarded with liking, affection, loyalty, and intimate. The second description of what a friend is an ally in a fight or a cause. Why don't the team join me this morning? The last point this morning is that being friends with God requires that we will fight on his side, that we will take on his battles, we will take on his purpose on the earth, and we will align ourselves with him. He will choose us as an ally because we are trustworthy and true. We can be relied on and be dependable. He can confide in us the plans and purposes, and he knows that you and I will be trusted to walk out our days on earth, and we will fight for righteousness, and we will fight for justice. See, in John chapter 12, Jesus says, I will not forsake the cross, for it is the very reason that I came to earth. We need to take on the battles of God in the days that we have been given. See, incredibly, what I see about Abraham, God says, no, I won't hide from him what is going to happen. Because I can trust Abraham, and I know that he will, whatever happens, he will fight for righteousness and justice. We see in those closing moments of Genesis chapter 18, it says this about Abraham. It says, then Abraham spoke up. Oh, sorry, again, wrong bit. Verse 22, the men turned away and went towards Sodom, the other men that is. But Abraham remained standing before the Lord. What an incredible picture of this relationship that Abraham, God's friend, has with God. And he actually steps in on behalf of these people and says down in verse 26, then Abraham spoke up. Now that I have been so bold as to speak to the Lord, though I am nothing but dust, he knows his place, yet he also knows the incredible relationship he has with God and the opportunity to speak up for justice and for righteousness. What if the number of the righteous is less than 50? Will you destroy the whole city because of five people? If I find 45 there, God goes on and comes down to this. Then he says, "May not the Lord be angry, but let me speak just once more. What if only 10 can be found there?" He answered, "For the sake of 10, I will not destroy it." You know, incredibly, Abraham was the friend of God. He knew he was just dust and ashes. He knew who he was, yet he was prepared to make a stand for righteousness. Why don't you stand this morning? Dust and ashes you might be, yet God would love a relationship with you this morning. Dust and ashes we are. And yet, can I encourage you this morning? You and I too can be called a friend of God. We can learn from Abraham and be in agreement with God about his promises for you. We can be like Abraham and be loyal and dependable. We can be like Abraham and being confidable. And lastly of all, you and I can be an ally for Jesus Christ and his purpose on the earth. Let me pray for you before I close this morning. God, I thank you that Abraham had a remarkable relationship by human standards with you, but also one that is incredibly and tremendously encouraging to us, the dust and ashes that walk alive here on the earth today. You aren't interested in just a narrow clique or a relationship that only a few of us could be cool enough or most popular enough to actually enter. But your offer of friendship is open to all. And God, this morning, as we close in song, I pray this morning that we too can enter this relationship, this agreement of friendship with